shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle.
Good evening, world, and good evening, Dylan.
Yes, it's snowing.
It is. It's a snowy Sunday evening, and you're very welcome along to Kill Shuffle, the show where we talk about albums.
Yes, albums and songs, and songs in albums.
Yes. Never albums and songs.
No. Well, I mean, we are hanging in Dream Theater. So.
Well, that's going to come up later.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing particularly, I would say, specific theme-wise. Like, last week was 80s week. I think this week it's just a real mix-em gathering.
Yeah, metalcore and chill.
Metalcore and chill.
Chillcore.
Yes, exactly. Nerdcore, actually, okay. Technically. So metalcore and nerdcore.
Okay. Okay.
Let's call it that. So coming up as far as reviews this week, we're going to talk about two bands from Japan, Azami and Crystal Lake. Then two of my favorite bands, In Flames and Dream Theater.
Yeah, handle that.
And then a rap duo, Rav and Kill Bill. And as well as for our time machine, we're going to talk about a 1998 album called Deserter's Songs by Mercury Rev, which I've just been very excited to talk about for a long time. So
good.
Yes, that should be a lot of fun. But I think we have enough to talk about that we can just get straight to the reviews. Did anything come up this week? Did you go to any shows? Or?
No shows really. Just Vukovi released a song.
Yes.
They've been number one for us for a long while.
Yeah.
And they're finally back with an exceptionally amazing song.
Claudia, I've only heard it once, but I was super, super impressed. I just threw myself headlong into these albums this week, so I haven't had a chance.
I spent an entire Dart ride just replaying it.
Okay,
Just to like try and get to the core of why it's so awesome, and it's perfect.
I was very impressed. I'm really excited for what Vukovi do next, because they really didn't put a foot wrong there with that that debut album. So it's good times all around.
It is.
Definitely. I think we saw the first single from a new Marina. Oh, she's no longer Marina in the Diamonds, just Marina. Okay. I don't know how you feel about her work, but I've always been a fan. I'm always interested to see what she does next.
I'd like to get in.
Yeah.
The Diamonds.
So I haven't, again, there's a whole rake of stuff that's kind of been coming out that I'm not caught up on yet, but I'm very excited to see where she's gone with this, because it's been a long, long time since her last album. So.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get cracking with Azami. This is Azami's second album, or second mini album, I guess you could call it. Yeah,
they call it that.
That's sort of a uniquely Japanese thing. They seem to be very popular over there.
It is. It's kind of like the logic anime uses for 13 episodes.
Opposed to 24.
Yeah, because you can promote it faster and you're more in the eyes of the public. Faster.
I'm not against the idea.
I like it.
Because some of our favorite albums, you know, could be classified as mini albums. For example, Paradise by White Lung, which actually I just ordered on vinyl. I'm very excited.
Yes.
I finally took the plunge into Discogs. I know. It's a dark place, but I did. So anyway, the album is called Leap. It follows Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Although, confusingly, the first track is called Dawn.
That's interesting.
It doesn't take musical ideas from the first album, right?
No, not too many. And
it's
just a
connective tissue between the two.
It is. I'm sure there's references in the lyrics, but I have not translated them yet.
For info, they're in Japanese.
Yeah.
they're
on the leaflet, which is handy. So I can make the map.
I stole that CD off you. Sorry, you won't find this on, as far as I know, any online streaming platforms right now.
You have one song on their YouTube from this, which is great.
Okay, that is good.
Yeah.
Nobody has illegally uploaded it to YouTube yet.
Yet.
Okay, so basically this is something that Dylan ordered on import, but as we'll discuss, I think it is worth trying to get your hands on. So they're definitely a melodic metalcore band.
Mm-hmm.
I think they fit into that genre fairly snugly
I think they're more than that first and foremost. I think they're more punk than they are metal. Like if we were talking about if their genres were guitar pedals, the punk would be first, like the speed punk.
Yes.
Would be first.
I think...
Then hardcore, then the metal.
Yeah. No, you're 100%... You're right there for sure. It has a punk energy to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of what gives While She Sleeps its punk feel, I think, to what Azami does.
Yeah. There's
that same... It's like a punk engine driving a metal train.
The thing that really separates this from the other one, which, as you guys know, I love...
Yes, you did. It is way right up there in your top...
This one is definitely is more of a positive upbeat to it. The other one, yeah, kind of melancholic in a way.
Yeah.
Kind of sad at moments. This one is definitely almost triumphant in sounds off the bat.
You want to know what it reminded me of? Mm-hmm. The first sort of 20 seconds, there's a slightly, you know, as you say, like quite a triumphant introduction to the first song.
Yeah.
Astronaut.
Yeah.
That was what hit me. And funnily enough, going through the record, not now, the similarities to Astronaut do fall away pretty quick. But from a tonal perspective and from a atmospheric perspective, yeah, not a million miles away. Because
my favorite Astronaut song from that album did a lot that this album is doing.
I Wish I Was There. Was that When the Sun Set? Yeah.
It's got a real punk kind of drum. Punk drums definitely tethered this down to the punk.
Right.
Like the guitars do all sorts of things. The vocals are definitely in the hardcore realm. Thoroughly.
There's a split.
There is.
You know, he has a very strong screamed vocal that he does, I would say, probably with 60% of the time. And then he drops in a clean on choruses. I don't find the clean voice is totally fine. It's absolutely does what it's supposed to do. I don't think it distinguishes itself necessarily one way or the other, but it does exactly what it needs to do for the song.
I think he's got a lovely singing voice.
Yeah.
Soars, it goes everywhere it needs to go.
Yeah, no. He's quite versatile.
Yeah.
It actually reminds me the trade-off between, as I say, those punk and even sort of pop-punk inspired melodies and maybe the hardcore drumming than the metal guitars. It does remind me a little bit of a slightly less insane Dance Gavin Dance that we reviewed last year. They have two vocalists, whereas this is just one guy who happens to do a lot of things with his voice.
Yes, and that props to him.
Yeah,
being able to switch so much without blowing up your voice.
And yeah, I wonder how he does it live.
I'm pretty sure he does it well live. I've seen a few videos, and he's flawless.
Okay,
like
very good. Another band that called to mind a little bit, especially on that track, Manipulate. I think if you translate it, it's the third to last track. Beartooth. Okay. Again, that was probably one of the more stadium melodic type tracks, and it definitely reminded me of the way that Caleb Shomo blends pop songwriting with sort of metal aesthetics, which was cool. It's over almost before it begins.
Yeah, it is.
I would say it's 22 minutes, right?
I think this is the reason I like this so much is you don't get tired of it. Like, there's no moment where I'm like looking at my watch, because some metal albums do have that.
Oh yeah.
Where it's like, okay, too much of a good thing. But this seems, I like the 7-song approach.
Very
fast, and each song is given as much focus as the next one.
Yeah.
In terms of quality, like quality over quantity.
Sure.
This is like proof in the pudding of that.
Yeah.
I think. They're all strong, very memorable, very different from each other.
That is the one thing. Apart from the
qualm you had last time. I think they're all the same. In a way, song type, but the actual songs are quite different in writing.
Yeah, I think they have made a move in a positive direction. That as far as I can definitely hear more of sort of thrash metal hardcore stuff on that second track.
And
it moves into more
third track. The third track is the Japanese one.
Signal. Sorry, that's no. Lip Service. Yes, the one with the Japanese title. Yes, that is the one that I'm thinking of. So that one is kind of, I guess, what you would say, like the heavier, more hardcore track.
Yeah, very much like what I wish Metallica sounded like nowadays.
Yeah, that's a touchstone for that one for sure.
Definitely in the riff, the main riff was an eye-opener.
Yeah.
Because it's great to see a band like this, more J-Rocky, do like thoroughly Metallica.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, the riffing on that song is excellent, and it's definitely a highlight on the record. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I love the songs before. They both kind of share very positive, not quite metal riffs. So just, I can imagine Blink-182 doing it.
That's what I mean. Yeah, there's a
part
punk
of vocals, but like, yeah,
there's definitely a punk approach to it. I think tracks 1, 2, and 3 really, really excellent, and everything that I wanted to hear as far as progression from Dawn and from what we had kind of discussed last time. The back half, I did feel a little bit like we were in more of a comfort zone.
Yeah, not in a bad way, really.
That's the thing. It's totally dependent on how bought in, as it always is. Yeah. But like, you know, I thought I really was so kind of impressed and the growth, the musical growth there on those first three tracks. Whereas I did feel like I was maybe listening to Dawn Part 2 on the the second half, which if you really love Dawn, is going to be right up your street.
There's a great part of the, I think it's the last song, Torch, that has just a tapping riff.
Yeah.
Like over a breakneck drum.
Yes.
And that's so cool. I love when the tempos contrast each other like that.
Where was... There was one track that had a really... Yeah, in Prayer. I think it's the third last track.
The drums do a kind of...
Yeah.
Like always on the crash while doing a solo over a chorus.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's like the last section of the song. It's astounding.
There's... Yeah, that was impressive. There's kind of a part where there's like really...
I think if the songs start off kind of samey as the last, they really grow in the latter half.
Mm.
Like the last three songs especially. Like they do get better as they go on.
Yeah, yes.
As the choruses happen. Because the choruses are very hooky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very interesting use of kind of these kind of soaring, almost ethereal tremolo leads on that track, Prayer, which I didn't expect. It was cool to hear them because it's quite a reasonably heavy track, and then there's this really, really hyper melodic guitar leads that kind of come in.
It's very cool.
Yeah, so bits and pieces I think I find very, very interesting this.
Did you like the production? I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, I found it a tiny bit lacking in mids a tiny bit. Now, that's not to say I thought it was totally grand. I never had an issue when I was listening to it, but it sounded a little bit wispy or something to me in either ear, but totally
fine.
I
always get that when I listen to things off a CD.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Maybe it's like that digital wash. I don't know.
Maybe if it was not 280?
I don't know. No. I ripped it lossless. I think it is just a production choice.
Yeah.
But it's
mixed very well, though. Bar, like, the mastering, the mixing is astounding.
I think it's a good sounding album. And just because something isn't necessarily to my taste from a mixing perspective doesn't mean it's not, like, objectively good.
Yeah.
The album, you can hear everything. Everything sounds great. It's deep, just... Yeah. I just sounding. Have a personal preference for really kind of hefty guitars, and these are more
in the punk realm. But the fact that everything else is in a metal realm, I think, makes it very unique.
Yes,
and not like a lot of what I've heard recently.
Yeah.
Even though a lot of bands kind of do the metalcore thing, this has a lot of other genres in it, which is really cool.
Yeah, they definitely take a step into a different direction.
Then
like a Bury Tomorrow, for example, who are a band that I really, really like.
Not too far. And I'm sure this is probably a testing the waters thing with mini albums, because I could only imagine what they do for an actual album.
Because isn't this what happened with Bandmaid, where they did a couple of mini albums and then they came out with their quote-unquote debut?
Yeah, the one that we first reviewed.
Sure.
And that was the best music they had. So, I don't know.
Like, so I'd be really interested to see, do you predict that they will come out with a debut LP at some point? Or
And it's probably going to be a knockout.
Yeah.
Because if a band's this good, second mini album, then I'm pretty sure they're going to keep that going.
I would wonder, I'd be interested to see if they kind of do end up coming out with something where, you know, they'll get like a really, you know, well-respected producer and do like a full PR and kind of almost act as if it's their first ever music in the West. Because I know this has basically been totally under the radar.
Yeah, they promote a lot on Twitter.
Yeah.
And a bit of Instagram. Not really on Facebook.
But they seem very much entrenched in the Japanese scene right now.
Yeah.
Like, I get the sense they're not even... They wouldn't even be a prominent band right now in the Japanese scene.
They were when I got the CD. They were in the charts.
The
top eight of that genre.
Okay.
Which is metal. It was like... I think it was one or two, actually.
Okay, great. No, I just wasn't sure, because, I mean, obviously they're just not on the radar over here, but I wasn't sure what their standing was in Japan. But they do have a reasonable amount of clout that they'll be able to use this as a launching pad into something
more. They have like 20 gigs with occasional different featured musicians and artists as well with them.
Cool.
From the label, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a cool break.
This is a band that I really like the idea of them, and I really like the execution on a lot of what they do. And it's a band that I definitely want to keep an eye on, and I know you will keep an eye on them for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I I don't think it's the finished product just yet. But that being said, they do so much that I like, and they have so many pieces that fit together nicely. I think, you know, I think they do have, when they do maybe come along with a full length at some point, I think it's going to be very special.
Yeah, they're going to make it interesting.
I think
you
so.
You can tell the energy's there.
Yeah.
They have a lot to give.
The talent is there. And there's a willingness to experiment. I mean, when I first heard those opening couple of chords, I was really so on board, because that is not something that you expect to hear. The approach they take at the start of that song and the whole song is excellent. So yeah, so definitely a lot to dig your teeth into there, and a band to keep an eye on, definitely. Yeah. Azami.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What is your favorite track? Which one is it?
It changes. I think it's between Torch and the third song.
Lip Service.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Torch is good. I think I will give it to... Funnily enough, I think I'm going to give it to Signal, second track.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's it.
I could go for any. I like them all almost evenly.
Yeah, that's a really nice, and it's I think it's, yes, they're all really short, all the tracks, which is why it flies by. Mm-hmm. So it's just a real short, sharp blast. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. What about you, Dill?
I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's perfect. As perfect as a 7 song thing needs to be.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Because it's exactly the music I like.
Sweet.
Like, whenever a band comes close to getting like this, I start to get the sweats in a good way.
All right. Well, we'll revisit at the end of the year, I guess. That's 10 out of 10 for Leap by Azami. Find it if you can.
Yeah.
All right. So, like I mentioned at the top of the show, I have two bands in this week's program, which is highly unusual, that I have considered in sort of among my top, definitely top five, but top three favorite bands of all time. And one of them is Dream Theater. So Dream Theater are a progressive metal band from New York. They've been around an incredibly long amount of time, over 30 years. They started in 1985. Jeez. Yeah. And when they were known as Majesty, but the members have not changed pretty much in the entire time they've been a band. The only really shake-ups has been the keyboard player has kind of been on rotation. Jordan Rudess has been in the band now for a long time, like probably 15 years or so, 15, 20 years. But and then unfortunately, Mike Portnoy was the drummer, and he kind of quit due to scheduling issues and various different things. That was probably about 10 years ago now, and he was replaced.
Seems a lot sooner almost.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. He was replaced by the stupendously talented Mike Mangini.
Who just picked it up, as I believe. I remember seeing the videos of him practicing all the songs and getting into the rhythm of touring and learning all the stuff. Like, he just picked it up.
They made a series about auditioning drummers and stuff, and there was, I think, one of the drummers that auditioned. Well, ends up, I think he drummed for Soilwork. I think another one of the drummers ended up doing James LeBrie's sort of melodic death side project. James Wildor, I think, is his name, and he does the screen vocals and drums for those albums. They're great, by the way. Check them out. But the other guys, James LeBrie, John Myung on bass, and John Petrucci, who's kind of a guitar god on guitar, have been steady since the 80s. And this is their 14th studio album. It's called Distance Over Time. Dill, just curious. I know there was a moment there where we were going to take Dream Theater to the Time Machine segment, and we kind of got sidetracked. But yeah. I kind of forgot to ask, what's your history with Dream Theater?
I like the stuff that's shown up on Guitar Hero. I really like that stuff. What's the album with the
Images and Words?
The marbles hitting.
Oh, Octavarium.
Yeah, I like a lot of that stuff.
Okay.
I like a lot of that.
Octavarium is sort of mid-career. That's like 2005 kind of era.
Yeah.
So the Dream Theater kind of started off quite light and fluffy prog on albums like Images and Words and Awake, and then went into beefier, riffier climbs with albums like Octavarium, Train of Thought. And then it's sort of, in recent years, I would say it's been a little patchy. They've done a lot of Rush worship. They've maybe been a little bit wet for me at points.
Okay.
But I was fully on board with Dream Theater, as in, like, I thought every album was a 9 or a 10, more or less, up until Black Clouds and Silver Linings, which I also love, but that was the moment where Portnoy left. And I think since Portnoy left, they've been struggling to find their feet a little bit in terms of a sound. They did two albums that were okay to not great as far as Dramatic Turn of Events and the self-title, and then they kind of went off a bit of a cliff with The Astonishing, which was the last album.
That was 5 hours long or something.
It was 2 hours and 10 minutes or 2 hours 15 or something, and I listened to it I think 3 times, and that was enough for me. It was it was sort of a high fantasy concept album, which, you know, for Dream Theater is not it's not an alien concept. They've done, you know, some of their best albums are concept albums. They do like often do 10 minute plus long songs, but The Astonishing really strained a lot of people's patience because the quality of the songwriting actually was not great, and it outstayed its welcome.
I think it wasn't great, but like the you know, when you're doing a writing session for an album,
sure,
a lot of bands, you hear a lot like, oh, we have 60 songs.
Yeah, oh yeah, you do.
We wrote and demoed.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of putting them all in the bucket.
Yeah, but no. I absolutely believe that there is a through line to that album. They thought it all out. They probably had, you know, graphs and charts and stuff like that. Dream Theater are a band that have... their craft was never in question. They're one of the most incredibly talented group of people I can think of. I don't doubt their intent with it, but the problem was they leaned so heavily into ballads on that album.
I liked a few of the ballads.
Yeah, I liked a few of them, but it was so many ballads that I just ended up feeling like ill by the end of the album. And thankfully, Distance Over Time seems to be a bit of a reaction and a response, not only to The Astonishing, but a little bit to the direction they've taken over the past 3 or 4 albums.
It's 10 songs long.
It's actually 9 songs long.
Yes. Yes, you're right, actually.
Sorry. No, but there is a bonus track, so you're not wrong. So it's 9 songs long. It's under an hour. And not a single one of the songs is over 10 minutes long. So as far as Dream Theater is concerned, this is like an EP.
Yeah.
And I mean, what are we saying, Dil, about Distance Over Time? Because I'm going to piece this out in a weird way, so I want to hear your thoughts first.
Well, I do have one pet peeve with prog rock.
Okay.
And that is the neoclassical approach.
Sure.
To guitar work. Not sure if you're aware of that kind of thing. Neoclassical, like,
yeah, I kind of would have thought that being that you're such a, you're kind of a a Steve Vai, Joe Satriani type fan, I kind of would have thought you'd appreciate that.
They're definitely not neoclassical.
Okay.
They're more, I don't know, they're just solo guitarists.
Sure.
But more of the Malmsteen vein.
Okay.
is neoclassical.
Right.
And that's like Mozart, Bach, but in a guitar-centric manner.
I hear you.
This album has bits of that.
Always.
And the bits of that, I'm like, okay.
That's okay. Funny. When I was a kid, and I first got into Dream Theater, I was like, that's kind of how I thought of it. Because I was coming from a classical music, like having kind of studied classical music for, you know, all of my childhood. I was like, oh my God, this is like the principles of classical music, but made awesome and cool and metal. That's actually the approach they take.
That's a good touch point to start liking this music.
Yeah.
I was at the other flip side. I was like, I've had enough of classical.
Yeah.
And here I am now working in a bookstore, forced to play classical CDs.
Oh, is that right?
And if I find like a flamenco album, I'll put it in. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of a bone to pick with neoclassical. I think it's too wankery at points.
I never got that from... Listen, I know I'm the worst because I will probably criticize other bands for this, but I never... It's rare that I get that from Dream Theater.
It's too good. And this album has bits of that.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, that's too good. As far as
sort of solo work, lines and things like that being too complicated, or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the feel of neoclassical I'm not too fond of. So that kind of marks off a bit of this for me.
It's funny that's your main pet peeve?
I think it's kind of my only pet peeve.
Because for most people, it's Le Bris, and I think I understand it from a from sort of a, if I think about it objectively, I understand why people don't like his voice. For me, I just feel like I've grown up with it, and I really appreciate for it for what it
is. His voice isn't too bad. It reminds me of Motley Crue in a way, actually.
Well, he's a trained opera singer. Like you're right. It's that classical thing. Like James Labrie is essentially an opera singer singing metal music. And he puts a lot of emotion into his voice. He can often, you know, inject a lot of anger into his voice.
I'm not saying I dislike his voice.
Yeah. No, I'm not. But I'm just sort of responding to a criticism I hear
Florian Nightwish is trained opera singer.
100%. And it's actually it's not a dissimilar delivery.
No, it's not.
Yeah. But I just want to say, I think vocally speaking, I think Labrie delivers a great performance on this album. I don't have any issues. Even on, you know, the Labrie cheese when it comes out in full force on Out of Reach, which is the ballad, it works for me. You know, it really works for me. Can I just give my kind of weird conspiracy theory about this album?
Okay.
Because
go to town.
I plan to. I consciously or unconsciously, right? I feel like this album is Dream Theater trying to reclaim their past a little bit. Because as a reaction to maybe the sort of post Mangini era, they all got into a cabin together in the woods in New York. That's the context for this. Mm. It's the first album where they've all been in a room together for the entire process, like living together, sleeping together, eating together, just being in each other's pockets, writing the whole album and recording the whole album together. And when you kind of come at it, because to me, Dream Theater don't sound like anybody else. Now, I'm sure if you come at it from the outside, you go, well, actually, no, like they, you know, and I acknowledge they have sounded a lot like Rush. That's the one band where I go, yeah, I can hear it. Definitely.
Yeah.
You know, but for me,
thankfully, I love Rush. So.
Yeah. And the start of Barstool Warrior is pure Rush. But I come at this more of a perspective of only hearing Dream Theater albums. And what I hear on this album is almost a little, it's almost like a greatest hits of songs that never made it onto each a dream sort of classic Dream Theater album. Yeah. So on Barstool Warrior, there's an Images and Words, that old school prog rock sort of major key type songwriting. On Room 137, again, I know that song is written entirely by Mike Mangini, but it has a train of thought, dark, somber, like heavy Dream Theater feel.
It has. Is that the one that has the Tool kind of bass to it? The doom, diddle, doom.
I think that's Signal to Noise.
Yeah, Signal to Noise.
To Noise, but you're right, because Signal to Noise, I think, almost reminds you of 6 Degrees of Inner Turbulence era Dream Theater, which was kind of, you know, which was like a really nice blend of all the different things they do well. And it's great because, you know, John, the bass player, co-wrote that song, which means he gets lots of hero moments at the start.
Yeah. So it's like I like the latter side of this album more almost, in a weird way.
On the Wits End has a frantic Octavarium type sound to it. Really, really chaotic, really heavy. And then Pale Blue Dot just reminds me of Black Clouds. It's like a mix of heaviness, minor keys, really quirky, like things sprinkled in. So what I hear as I listen to this album, and that was a really great way to contextualize it, was like, it's like a little taste of all the different eras of Dream Theater.
And I see that.
Yeah.
They're picking and choosing very carefully what they're...
Yeah.
Bringing back
and you really hear it with the tones that are used. Obviously, Petrucci's guitar, like it's iconic.
The vocal effects change at points, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
They do.
Barstool Warrior is proof of that.
Like, yeah,
kind
isn't
of
there
a chorus-y thing goes over the vocals?
That's
in a way.
Right.
It's a wash, kind of.
Where am I? Was it on that? Was it on that track? Definitely.
Barstool, I
possibly, yeah, no, it
sure.
Could be Barstool Warrior, where he has that sort of weird vocoder effect.
Yeah, it's what I usually associate with Dream Theater.
Yeah, it's been there.
Yeah.
As far as Rudess, I mean, again, he has so much history in the band at this point. Like, he can flip his keyboard to Dream Theater organ, and you immediately get transported back to Scenes from a Memory era. That would be on Fall into Light, would be the one. Sounds like it could have come off Metropolis Part 2. But then he has this really amazing grungy, distorted sort of saw type synth that he has frequently used for solos, but he hasn't used it in a while. He uses it on Signal to Noise. Again, it's like a real nice little trip down memory lane. So I think while none of these songs touch the best that Dream Theater has been for me, I think they all pull what's great about Dream Theater.
That's good. And that's real, a band realizing that.
Yeah, especially 14 albums into their career, you know? And they have the concepts, even though the songs aren't as long. They have, you know, the Carl Sagan song, that Last Sam Pale Blue Dot. You know, that's...
Yeah, I wish I had that as well.
Right, anyway. Yeah. Well, that was more Richard Dawkins, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Pale Blue Dot, I think, I really find interesting, because usually those types of songs are real sort of positive kumbaya type, whereas Pale Blue Dot is actually quite sinister, and it's almost gives you the sense of isolation in the universe, you know, where he's kind of making you feel insignificant, where, you know... It's a different approach, and there's, you know, there's kind of tastes of everything they do well, I think.
And it's heavy. It's a lot heavier than it has been in the past, right?
Yes.
I noticed that off the second song was when I was like, "This is heavy."
Paralyzed.
This is pretty heavy. Yeah.
Yeah, that riff is real spidery and groovy.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool.
I like that riff quite a bit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And as I say, Room 137, like. Great to see Mike Mangini getting a chance to write a song. Didn't know until I looked up the Wikipedia, because it's saying he just like slots right into the feel of heavy Dream Theater. And I love the feel of that song. It's unique, but it is definitely heavy. You know, Dream Theater, one of those bands that can kind of surprise you with how heavy they get, because I think when you think of them, you think of, oh, like Le Bree, he's so melodic, and like John Petrucci's always going off on these flights of fancy on his guitar, but actually when they riff, they can really riff.
Yeah, I love the moments when they lock down like that.
Mm.
And they're a little far and few between, but I really enjoy those moments.
Yeah. What about the start? I absolutely adore the start of Pale Blue Dot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's great.
I love how it ends more than it starts.
Oh, I love that start, I gotta say.
Untethered Angel.
Oh, I like that song, huh? You don't like it?
I kind of do.
It's a thing. It's, again, it's another callback. It's such a nostalgia trip, this album. Okay. Petrucci and Rudess do this thing where Rudess picks a keyboard tone that's really similar to a guitar, but it's recognizably not a guitar.
Yeah.
Petrucci plays a solo, and then they harmonize them. They do a dual harmonized lead, but it's keyboard and guitar. You know, that do 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 do.
No, and I very much.
You know the part. Yeah, yeah.
I think the problem. I love it. The melodies drag a bit.
Okay.
Like it goes on.
Yeah.
But I know Dream Theater fans love that, so that's fine, whatever.
I'm such a mark for Dream Theater. I really am. Yeah, but you know, I'm so happy that I can be as positive, because on first brush I listened to this and I was like, oh, I don't know, it's just it always feels like it's a journey of kind of getting to know their albums,
and I'll make a concerted effort to listen to this more. I like, after listening to what you have to say, I want to pick out those bits and really give them more shots,
because I feel like it's worth your while. I wouldn't say that about
four listens in, and I want to double that at least.
Yeah, I'm probably around six or seven, but yeah, it's nice to know, because I still don't know if like the self-titled, for example, is worth the time, you know. There's songs on it that I think are good or even great, but we're just checking our recording hasn't corrupted itself here. Fine, it's totally fine. So I think this is definitely one, if you were going to go, what's a good Dream Theater album to start with? It's not this one, but this is not a bad choice.
It isn't.
It's not, because it doesn't have as distinctive a flavor as some of their older material, where I would say don't start with Awake, because it's such a unique sound. It doesn't give you a good idea of the band in general. This album gives you a great idea of the band in general.
Yeah, you need context. And
Yeah.
God, any last words? Like, I don't know. Like, I enjoy when this gets really 80s. I know that might be a pet peeve for you.
No.
But I adore it, since I am a total darling for the 80s Rush.
Sure.
And this band, more than most bands, know how to do that perfectly. And make it a little heavier.
Yeah.
Like, Barstool Warrior is proof of that.
Oh, yeah, because it starts all Rush, and then it kind of... it does this great thing that Dream Theater are able to do, where good.
It's like a darker subdivisions.
But they have an ability to kind of to layer in really lush, rich chord progressions. As you say, it's probably leaning into neoclassical because they'll play around with transpositions and moving from one key to another and all this kind of stuff. But they can do that while having somebody shredding over the top, you know?
Yeah.
It's you don't often hear those two things, like a really, really studied attention to detail on like ballads, but at the same time being, you know, like melting your face off in the instrumental department. So.
Yeah. It's not totally my kind of thing. That it just like when it comes to melting my face off, if I want to melt my face off, I'll go to Strapping Young Lad.
Yeah. I get that.
But even that guitar wankery, as Devin has said, it's like he makes fun of it. He makes fun of his own guitar wankery of the past. So when I hear a band 14 years still doing the wankery, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You're doing a good thing, but like,
if I ever felt like it wasn't in service of the song, I wouldn't be on board. And that's the reason maybe why I had kind of dipped my foot out of the bandwagon.
Yeah. Well, I'm of the thesis that like guitar wankery is always an ego.
No.
An ego. Hence wankery.
Like, yeah, but I don't consider it wankery. When the president does it, that makes it not illegal. No. I would say Petrucci is the president.
Okay.
No. There are moments. There's definitely fleeting moments where I'm like, okay, you know, maybe you are showing off, but really, genuinely, like, you go back and listen to. I can sing with guitar wankery. I think it's not catchy. It's just technique. But if you actually go back to the albums I know really well, I know them note for note, like note for note. I can hum you, sing you those solos, even if I'm going like, but you can, I can actually sing you the notes because I think it's catchy and it serves the song. Yeah. And if it's not doing that, it's a failure.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's my line. I'm not saying everything on this album is gold.
And I'm not saying Dream Theater stop with that stuff. It's excellent. It's kick ass in its own right.
Yeah. But that's right. I mean, people's tolerance level for that is different. But my favorite track on this album is probably Signal to Noise. I just adore that chorus.
Yeah. From Barstool to Room 137. I can't choose.
That run.
Yeah, that run is excellent.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. It's an 8 out of 10 for me.
I guess it's a 6 out of 10 for me.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Hey, if it's not your thing.
It could grow when I go back to listen to the other Dream Theater albums because that's a chore I want to do.
I would
homework.
Yeah. It's so hard to know because the thing that I fell in love with Dream Theater for was Scenes from a Memory, and that might be a good place to start.
Well, I want
to
start from 0.
Okay.
So like,
well, don't listen
total
to
total context.
Yeah. The debut album is garbage. I've listened to it once. It doesn't even. It's not remotely representative of the band. It's like a different singer.
I just thought it was funny how some bands do that. Like, we put all our heart and energy into like a 3-song EP, and it's objectively pretty excellent.
Right.
And then I'm like, how do amazing bands have a shitty first album? Like, there's a lot of that, right?
I think it was just in the 80s. It was different. You know, there wasn't as much. I think now a band is almost seen to like their debut album is the could be the beginning or the end of a career. Whereas back in the day, you would sign a 3-album deal, and they would just be an incentive or sort of a an encouragement of you just to go into the studio, just record whatever you had at the time, and then put it out there just to kind of get something out there.
Yeah.
And with Dream and Day Unite, I mean, it's basically sort of cock rock. It's it's not even progressive.
Okay.
And there's a different singer. So start with Images and Words. That is probably in my top 5 favorite albums of all time. Okay. So if that's any kind of encouragement.
Yeah. Well, if you do Darren Gray at some point, I'll do this.
All right. Okay. That's fair. Yeah. Okay. So that's Dream Theater. The album's called Distance Over Time. Mm-hmm. And it is probably a good place to start if you're thinking of ever giving Dream Theater a shot. So check it out.
What do we have next?
Dill, do you want to talk about the East or the West? Because I want to pick one of your albums next. So.
Oh, geez. I mean, I guess the West.
The West, all right. West, the Wild West. Well, it's a bit of a mix, actually, as we'll discuss. But this album is called New Moon. It's sort of a collaborative effort from two rappers. One is called Rav, and the other is called Kill Bill.
It's about their third collaborative effort, I think, in terms of the...
Yeah.
Doing stuff for a while.
Okay, cool. It's hard to dig up too much information. I've read a couple of interviews. I've looked back. Certainly I know that these two guys have solo albums individually, and they've guested on each other's albums and things, and they have a podcast together, and they're definitely
friends. They do,
friends. On YouTube. Yes, but so Rav is a dude who was born in the former Soviet Union, grew up, it's very non-specific, just seems to have grown up in various locations.
Carolina, they're South Carolina boys.
And Kill Bill is from Carolina, exactly, in America. Sonically, is it unfair to say that this is lo-fi hip-hop beats to relax / study to?
Yeah, that seems
sample-wise.
That's the thesis of this brand of album they do, because they also do kind of up-tempo, real fast, frantic kind of rap.
Okay,
with more of like a huge element to it,
right?
And this is more of the introspective vibes they go for.
And yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely more mood-based. This kind of album they do.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Because the samples we're talking about, I keep hitting the table here. The samples we're talking about are very much like loungy kind of guitar, like the really subtle kind of trumpets. There's lots of vinyl crackle, some like oohs and ahs, almost like doo-wop type stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all very laid back and chill. Yeah. There's one
not,
song.
Not too far removed from what Odyssey does.
No, probably not like, musically.
It's very much a mindset of like SoundCloud rap. I think it's the self-professed genre.
I think SoundCloud rap meets nerdcore, because it's like,
oh boy, is it nerdy?
Yeah.
Like between the anime references, the video game references, and samples.
Yes, I figured they were probably from dubs of anime samples. Lots of references to video games. Lots of chat about smoking blunts at 2 a.m. and
this album is very interesting in how deep it gets. I'm not sure if you've picked up on that lyrically between
interesting
things they do. Basically, they pick a topic,
right,
and in a way one of them does one flip side of emotions to it, the other one in their verse does the other another side, like maybe a less positive or more self not harming, but self-recognize.
Self-effacing or whatever.
Yeah.
This is probably true. So yes, I did pick up on that to a certain extent. I'm getting the sense that you're a big fan. So what is it? Is it like as far as the actual sort of lyrical content and the delivery?
Yeah.
So explain to me the differences between Rav and Kill Bill, and maybe a little bit about like what it is about their flow and their lyrics and stuff like that that kind of struck a chord with you.
I think I like a lot of Rav's Tribe Called Quest worship. I love when he does that.
Yeah,
he has quite that voice for it as well.
Yep.
Kilbill definitely has the grit. He brings the grit, and I quite enjoy that. And he's very very punchy with his delivery.
Right.
It's never too fast. It's always well intentioned, and he does a lot of really interesting wordplay. Both do, but they're both very different in that respect.
Yeah, hugely different.
As far as like what topics or how, I guess they're both saying the same things at different points in the songs.
Yeah.
How it reflects with them.
Yeah.
There's
quite a few guests as well.
Yeah, there's quite a few guests to fill in different bits.
Yep.
And especially like in Dirge. Or not Dirge, I think it's maybe Passion Fruit. Yeah. Mm. The backing vocals in that are sung by Square, I think.
Square just did a verse.
I don't think so. I think he just does the
Okay.
But yeah, it's interesting lyrically. This album is in a nutshell from what they did a YouTube video on the podcast dissecting their own album.
Right.
In a way.
Right.
And from what I got from it, in a nutshell, it's about being okay with depression.
Sure.
Just being okay with it as like a thing that comes back. Being okay with where you were in other albums, as far as emotionally, not getting too caught up in nostalgia. Some of it is also fuck the internet.
Yes.
Fuck the ego of like people on Twitter and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that, especially later on in the album.
Mm.
Like especially Dirge and Put It Down. goes through that.
Yeah.
So it's basically kind of like being okay with a rapper's ego and just all the emotional baggage that comes with it.
Yeah, I think I heard that a little bit on the outro of Little Empathy. There's kind of that.
Yeah.
Rav is sort of singing a little bit, and he kind of seems to sort of flip between having a death wish and not having a death wish, but it's you know, it's fragile and it's nice. But I think it starts and ends quite strong, actually. The Now You Don't is great. It's got this really cool choir sample. Rav starts off sort of rapping, but on a note. You know, there's like a kind of a sung quality to it,
which I
enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
I think generally, from a general perspective, the thing I would lavish the most praise on is definitely the production. Yeah. Almost to a song, I'm a big fan of the samples on that are on display, and you know, and clearly some of it is done live or you know, tracked or whatever. There's, you know, kind of backing vocals and things like that that are really, really nice. And actually, if this album was purely,
it flows well.
Yeah, I think it flows well. Definitely, you know, it does have that laid back. And I say lo-fi hip hop beats to chill / study tour or whatever that Chilled Cow YouTube live is called, but you know, but there is, you know, there's a little bit more momentum to it than that. There's a little bit more of a pulse to it than that.
You get that in songs like Saffron, which has one latter half is Rav's part, is just has an insane tempo flow to it. It's impressive.
Saffron is the vaporwave one, actually, which I also, you know, I as far as I'm concerned, I'm still bought in on vaporwave. I know it's a little bit it's falling out of fashion a bit, but I still like it.
I like it. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. So musically or like instrumentally speaking, I'm on board. Then I think Rav, I'm less of a fan of his flow, especially when he kind of ramps up the speed, but when he's laid back,
I guess that's more subjective.
No, this is all going to be, well, anyway, but yeah, this is all going to be subjective, I think, but yeah, but I think when he's kind of at that mid tempo or especially when he's in the sort of more half singing vein, I'm quite a fan. When it gets a little bit more wordy, less so, but yeah, my big issue on this album is Kill Bill. I gotta be honest,
that's
fine. I just found him quite problematic from a sonic perspective. It really, really sounds to me like he's inflecting an African-American vernacular English to me. Like, that is possibly not earned, and like, these are two white guys. Again, I don't want to make this too political, but a lot of the words he uses, a lot of the phrasing, a lot of the individual sort of the inflections and the ways he pronounces words are not typical of a white guy from North Carolina. And, you know, there's a conversation to be had maybe a little bit about using cultural capital that's been gained from rap music. It is anybody's right to create any kind of music they like. Yeah. And as I said, I think Rav's delivery
does it in general.
I think it does, but I think Rav's delivery, I think this, you can pick a million examples, right? Eminem is one. This guy Greaves, quite a talented guy, but they all
Bill's spoken voice is basically that. It's
yeah,
like that's as deep as it naturally is.
Yeah, but it's phrases like, you know,
that's
like,
true.
I've just written in a couple of examples. He has like everybody, Amma. He calls women hoes. He says like 5-0 this, 5-0 that, worthless, shoddy, dog. He's like folk show.
I think that's just shorthand rap in general.
I know, I understand that, but the cultural capital of those words and those phrases and that way of speaking are Black America. Like that is what made me uncomfortable about it. His delivery as well. I'll get off this in a second, but his delivery sounds quite false. It's real deep, gravelly. It sounds like he's trying to do sort of an Exhibit DMX type thing, especially on Off that song Love Drug. That was the one, because it's double tracked. Mm-hmm. He's right there in your ears doing that deep kind of, it sounds put on to me.
Oh, I love the punchiness to that.
Yeah, listen, it works for a lot of people, and I've been online, I've seen all this. Maybe I'm the only one saying this, but to me, I can't hang with Kill Bill. Rav, if I was listening to a whole album of his material, we'd be having a different conversation. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think a lot of the guests on this, one guy in particular, Ran, Mega Ran, he's on Saffron, I think, possibly. Yeah, yeah.
Put It Down. Yeah, he's in Put It Down.
Yeah. Is it Put It Down? Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, yeah. His verse is fantastic. Like, properly great. Like, up there with anything that I've heard in the last kind of 12, 18 months. And, you know, I do think a lot of the highlights on this album do come from the black contributors, of which there are two or three. Yeah. I'm less enamored of the Aerospace, and there's another guy who kind of show up towards the end of the album.
Really, Ashido Braj?
No, he's okay. He's actually pretty good. No, Aerospace in particular does that weird sort of generic foreigner voice that Eminem sometimes did in his latter albums. You know, where he, like, you know that Mr. Officer, please, like that type of foreigner voice. It didn't appeal to me. So what I'm saying is,
I think Kendrick, more of a new Kendrick thing that Kendrick does is that.
I listened to quite a bit. It was definitely more so like Eminem when he's trying to be funny. But from a musical perspective for me. Again, because that's obviously like uncomfortable to say, but it made me quite uncomfortable to listen to. So just expressing that.
That's fine. You can take it as seriously as or unseriously as you like.
I don't think
it was from a serious.
Yeah, but no, they're talking about serious stuff, you know, and this is their career. So, you know, I don't want to say anything that I don't mean, but I do. That did kind of bother me. And I know as a random Irish white guy, that's pretty rich. But like ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, it's like, white people do have a habit of taking the cultural capital of usually black Americans, but like black people in general, and it was done with blues, and I'm not saying that discredits white people doing rock and roll. It's been done with rap, and I'm not saying that discredits white people doing rap, but you know, there is a line to be walked. Musically speaking, I think this is fantastic. Lyrically speaking, I think one third of this is good.
I think maybe a bit more, a good bit more, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So that's where I'm at with it. But I wanted to give you a chance to sort of to give your praise and everything, because I knew that was going to kind of throw a grenade in the room a little bit.
Yeah.
But, Kill Bill, I gotta say, it's just not my thing. And to be honest with you, he does come across, all of that stuff aside, to me, I can't stand that braggadocio. You know, Rav to me feels a lot more, what would you say, like self-deprecating maybe, or just a little bit, it doesn't feel like he's trying to impress you, you know, whereas with Kill Bill, I kind of feel like the intent is, it's like brag rap type stuff.
No, I don't.
But think maybe so. That's a nuance that I'm missing.
Yeah, it's definitely not that.
Okay.
I think it doesn't have a lot to show, so he's not.
Yeah.
Fucking flaunting it, you know. They're talking about the ego, of course,
but he
definitely doesn't have that kind of thing. I mean,
okay.
All rappers have to have an ego. I'll start with that.
Yeah. Well, I've heard. Yeah, yeah. No, I do get that, and I know it's
you can't rap without an ego, basically.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, you can't go up on stage without an ego like that in rap. Like, it requires the lyrical basis requires that kind of.
Yeah, but it's something you can flip on its head.
I'm okay with it, basically. I'm not too
bothered. But did it even occur to you?
Like, slightly.
Slightly, okay.
Slightly, like, his voice is not put on in any way. I will say there's a bit of attitude behind it.
Yeah.
And of course, he borrows a bit of slang, he does. But
yeah.
I think his wordplay is very, very cool. Very cool. I prefer Rav, but that's...
It reminded me of the whole...
I like the combo. For the most part.
I think really what's come out of this is I would keep an eye on Rav. I think it's fair to say he's the producer? Is he the guy that does the beats?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly, but...
Okay. I think as far as would I love to hear a trip-hop / sort of samples album, you know, yes, I absolutely would. Like, I would...
Those Rav albums exist, but
if I didn't have to talk about, you know, and great, send them my way. If I didn't have to talk about the actual sort of lyrical and vocal content of this album, I would be singing its praises from the rooftops, because I love this stuff. I've talked about Kid Loco loads of times. This is right up my street. It's just I had to kind of address that lyrical thing.
Yeah, I mean,
or not even so much lyrical, but just like the kind of the general vocal approach. I'm also not a massive fan of the. I mean
it reminded me totally of early Childish Gambino,
Which actually, not a massive fan of either. Yeah, so there you go.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, yeah.
I have no qualms with that. So that's
yeah,
totally up for anybody's grab. You know.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah. Some good lines on this though. I think like that line that Mega ran kind of pops out. He says, "As dark as I am, how could you ever take me lightly?" It's a great little line. Mm, love that. Mm. Yeah. So it's an album.
Yeah. And I quite adore it.
Yeah, I want to hear the instrumental version. But yeah.
Yeah. Each song is as lovely as the other for me. I think later on it gets a little washy at points. But for the most part, all the songs are very cool, very different from each other.
Mm.
Unique. The album cover really says it all, I guess.
Well, yeah, the album cover...
Their weebishness.
Yeah, and yeah.
Well, the vibe is lovely as well.
The album cover is like an anime, it's sort of styling, and then they, you know...
That's just who they are. You know.
Yeah, the references to kaijus, what's that all about?
Kaijus, man.
What is that?
I don't know. It just is.
They call themselves kaijus, I don't know. And then at one point, I think he says he's living like a neat.
Yeah.
It's all... Yeah,
it is.
It just to me feels like it does feel like the work of two people who live in a bit of a bubble. Now, that's not to say like some of the best art comes from people who are living in sort of isolated situations.
I don't think it's that. I think it's more so of a very, very chilled out, relaxed. This is just me off my work.
Maybe.
And this is what I'm wrapping up, my simple life.
Yeah.
And the awesomeness of, you know, enjoying life in its simplest ways.
Yeah,
you
know? I hope so.
There's a lot of that.
Like, I hope so.
There is a song that's where they're literally just talking about like sitting down, getting stoned, playing video games.
That's a lot of it.
They're old classics. I love that as a concept. I can relate to that in a weird way without the stoning part.
I don't know. I just I understand the need for. I understand that, you know, that it's another mode of expression, but like. As far as content, I mean, that Midnight, it doesn't compare to like Midnight Marauders and what's been talked about on that album.
That's trying to hit a lot, you know,
That's what I mean. That's like, that's kind of got a political engine to it, I guess.
Yeah.
And this isn't even trying to do that. This is...
In a way, casual.
I think
hitting the real problems with Twitter is as close as it gets. Which is kind of a definitely more social...
Yeah,
political way. It's almost political.
Yeah, like
that old website. But yeah, you know, it affects everybody. So I like those touch points a lot.
Yeah. Hey. So hey, listen, you know, and as I say, there are certainly bits that I did enjoy. But it was just other bits that I didn't. So my favorite track on it is "Put It Down," for sure. Yeah. I think it's great. I love that sax sample on it. My God, like, that's just glorious.
What do you give?
I'm gonna give it a 5. I can't give it more than 5, okay. Unfortunately.
I will give it an 8.
Alrighty.
That's what it is.
Sweet. But every one of those 5 is the samples, baby, because they're wonderful. So that's New Moon by Rav and Kill Bill. Yeah.
And my favorite song is
toss
between I'd say Passion Fruit or Saffron.
Yep.
They were really kind of lo-fi tropical feels to it, and I love it.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. That was New Moon by Rav and Kill Bill. Check it out for yourself. Don't take my word for it. I never, ever take my word for it. Okay. Let's bounce back again to another one of my favorite bands. This is the new album. It's called Eye the Mask by In Flames. Until, I would say, from the year 2005, maybe 2006, up until about... 2011, 2012, In Flames were my number one favorite band ever. Just adored them. Everything they'd done, I thought was absolute genius, all the way from like their formation in 1990 up until Sounds of a Playground Fading in 2011. Mm-hmm. A lot of people fell off the bandwagon earlier than that, not me at all. Some of my favorite stuff that In Flames has done, because for context, they're a melodic death metal band from Gothenburg in Sweden. And their sound began as a very kind of, you know, dual harmonized guitar leads, death growl vocals, ever so slight Swedish folk influence.
It was quite different.
Yeah. Blast beats and all this kind of stuff. Like, just, you know, your typical melodic death metal. Yeah. Like, where Soilwork was the really thrashy melodic death metal band in the early days, In Flames were the more sort of Iron Maiden inspired, galloping, I would say galloping is a good way to describe their earlier material. And then around 2002, I think, with their album Reroute to Remain, they sort of took a sharp left turn into a crunchier, more simplistic, power chord, like melodic singing approach.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly inspired by nu metal in the States, which I thought came off great. They had two or three albums like that. Yeah. And then moved into where an area that they've kind of sat in for a while of sort of groove-inspired riffs and sing-along choruses. The only deviation from that was in 2014 with Siren Charms, which was the album that destroyed In Flames for me. It's like a 3 out of 10. It's absolutely true. Yeah. I listened to it the other day. There was four songs I had to skip.
I
literally couldn't bring myself to listen to them. It was so
on
awful.
The first listen you skipped?
No. I listened to it 1,000 times to try and get into it, and there's one song that I adore unconditionally, Filtered Truth.
Oh, yeah.
Two other songs that I kind of half like, and the rest I have to skip. I hate them so much.
Yeah.
And then with Battles in 2016, I don't think they did enough to regain their reputation. There's maybe 4 or 5 songs in that album I like. But
so it's almost like in a way. Debatably, Darren Gray for me,
right?
Like the latest album may seem like an objective drop off from a point. I reckon this is more of a drop, like an exponentially more of a drop off in quality.
This Eye the Mask?
I mean In Flames is.
Oh my god! Oh my god! The drop off from Sense. That's the thing, is I could never understand people sort of. Have different points. Everybody that says there's a drop off is certain they're the correct one. So there's the people that say 2002 Reroute to Remain, In Flames was dead to me. Okay, fine. There's other people that say no. For everybody, it's objectively Complarity 2007 or whatever year that was, right? And then probably the other camp of people go, no, it was Sounds Big and Fading, that album's garbage. Mm-hmm. Disagree with all of that. I think they wrote some of their best material during that period. But for me, Siren Charms, there's no question about it. That album is objectively dreadful. So they had there was a lot of broken trust. There was a lot of huge amounts of disappointment and a huge weight of expectation that I really wanted them to live up to on that album. And I think what they did do was they kind of settled back into a comfort zone from 2008. Very similar sound to Sense of Purpose, which is, again, like I mentioned earlier, groove-inspired riffs and sing-along choruses. Yes. But the experimentation on that album was very weak.
Mm-hmm.
And what we get with Eye the Mask is not the same lineup. The drummer, the lineup is a skeleton of the original lineup. There's now only just Anders Fridén, who's the singer, and Björn Gilotta, who was the original rhythm guitarist. Other than that, the rest of the band has moved on and parted ways and things like this. But yeah, so I think they're working with the same producer, Howard Benson, as they did on Battles. So there isn't going to be a huge change in sound. There isn't a huge change in sound. It's still in that zone, that 2008 zone. But what I think they've done on this album is they've consolidated that sound. They've made fewer missteps into experimentation that don't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear that.
And the good stuff on this album I think is better than the good stuff on Battles. So it's still only been out a couple of days, and as I say, I have so much history with this band, it's very difficult to contextualize. But am I happy? Like, am I disappointed?
Not a lot of miss.
No,
you know, there's
not a huge amount of miss.
Like, I hear that.
Yeah,
not being a fan of this band, I just hear it. Like,
yeah,
it's not horrendous.
No,
you know, it's not a 3 out of 10 album.
Oh no! That's like, yeah. That was the thing about Battles. It was like there were songs on it that reminded me of the glory days and made me so happy. And there were songs like Wallflower and Here Until Forever that made me sad.
I had heard them.
That made me so sad. And I was like, what has happened? Yeah. And I think on this album they've reined in. So the problem is that it's a smaller pool of songwriters. Jesper, who was in the band until 2009, I think, Jesper was the death metal guy. He was the grimy, gritty, sort of mean side of In Flames. And then when he was gone, you have Bjorn, who clearly has a mind for writing great groovy riffs, but also really likes to kind of get a little cheesy. And then Anders, who has been leaning further and further towards kind of showing off his voice. Now, his voice has improved, but he's never been a opera grade singer or anything like that. So the bad points, far too many ballads. far too many ballads on this album, I think.
Yeah, I think the acoustic stuff is wafer thin.
I think one of the acoustic songs is reasonably wafer thin, but I think that last track, Stay With Me, it works. The problem is that the mid tempo ballads like All the Pain, In This Life, Follow Me. Again, that's actually fine, but
it's for me, it's more so problem of the writing than it is the song choice, like ballad.
Okay,
like you just write a great ballad in any album.
But what I want from In Flames is
like
they can do like they, in the past they've I've done heard. They've done songs like Metaphor, they've done songs like the last song of Sands of Plague and Fading, and there's a song, there's an amazing 8 minutes, like the longest song they've ever done. It's like an 8 minute song of Sense of Purpose, which is can't remember the name of it now, but it's fantastic. So they're well able to do the sort of slower slash ballady type stuff. It's just it's better when there's only one or two of them on an album as opposed to maybe five like there is here. That's my main complaint. I think the up-tempo stuff is largely excellent.
Yeah. I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Just instantly the things I like about this. The songs I like in this album.
Yeah, let's see if we concur.
Voices.
Excellent song. Killer chorus. Love it.
Eye the Mask. Oh my God.
Best chorus they've written in a long time.
It just sounds great. Like I was like, this is straight to my playlist. It's just objectively a great song.
Eye the Mask. My God.
Like that's as good as the stuff in the Azami album.
Yeah.
Like that's, they're on the same baseline now.
Yeah. Yeah, Eye the Mask is just, that was such a relief when I heard that song, because it came out as a single. I was like, I've just been humming that song all week. It's great.
Call My Name was like, okay, the chorus is a bit stretchy, but it's all right. It's all right.
Literally.
It's so good.
Written down in my notes, vocally interesting approach, pretty lazy chorus. So same as you. Yeah.
I kind of guess.
Yeah.
They're trying to go somewhere with that, but it's, you know. If I'm a guy who's written a song I think is great
for
2 months and has let no one else listen to it, then I'll still think it's great. But it'll be Call My Name.
Okay, all right. Know,
probably sound like that.
So where are we going from there?
It gets pretty lazy after that.
Yeah. No, so
it comes back up with Burn.
Burn is great. No, I think it comes back up with them. So this is a little little wink and a nod to the fans, right? Okay. That song We Will Remember. And the lyrics to that song, every line is an allusion to a previous In Flames album or song. And I think it's kind of a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek reference to the fact that the fans...
I wouldn't recognize that.
Yeah. So that the fans are, are a little bit maybe bitter about the direction they've taken. But what I like about that song is it's actually got a fairly kind of crushing riff. But then it also blends in it's definitely, as far as I'm concerned, the best like melodic ballady type song on the album. Mm-hmm. There's references to Colony. There's a song called Ordinary Story of Colony, which they reference. Artifacts of the Black Rain, which is a song from like the Jester Race 1996. And this is reference to Behind Space, which is from the album even before that. So it's like, it's an acknowledgement by the band of like, no, we haven't forgotten our history. And I appreciate that. You know, I think that's cool.
Him did that at one point.
And then you're right. Burn is a great, It's just another really good sort of meat and potatoes.
It is very groovy, meat and potatoes, but I like it.
Me too.
It's fine.
Me too. Me too. And then and then it kind of peters off a little bit for me.
Yes, and for me.
Yeah. Okay. There's your kind of your typical what Donald doesn't enjoy, which is the sort of Middle Eastern inspired / Indian type riff on Deep Inside. Kind of got that ding 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 type thing.
Technically impressive. It's an interesting song.
Middle section works reasonably well. It's got kind of some nice flourishes to it, but it's like ba ba da ba 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 da na 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 na, which again, like anything sounds like it should have someone going over the top and a sitar underneath. I'm immediately turned off unless it's really authentic.
Interesting groove, but
yeah. So I think we've kind of gone through the main sort of journey of the album, which is to say that it's not a triumph. but you're talking to somebody who is like, I've so much love for this band, and I know now it's like it's literally Anders Bjorn and a guy called Niklas who was in the band for 5 minutes in the 90s.
It is quite barely the same band,
skeletal version.
It's not like to go back to Darren Gray again.
Yeah,
they've always been the same members. Yes. So it's not like I can
But do that. I think Tanner Wayne, the drummer, who funnily enough was in Chiodos, which is the band I'd love to bring to Time Machine sometime. They're really cool post-hardcore band.
But you can't be like, oh, lads, for the last 5 years, all five of you have been like this. No, it's not them.
No. Right. You can't blame Peter Ivers because he left the band before this album was made. I don't think this tarnishes their legacy. Unlike Siren Charms, there are a couple of songs off Battles that I would want to hear in the live setting. But I would want to hear Voices in a live show. I would want to hear Eye the Mask in a live show.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, there's a few songs on this album that I think are genuinely just great In Flames songs.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a home run.
No. It is not. But, like, I don't want to say too many negative things about it because, of course, I think it's a serviceable album, I guess.
Yeah.
I think it's like half or almost a third of what they were at their peak.
Yeah.
At least for me, like, I like Silent Playground and like, I actually do like that album quite a bit.
Yeah, it's good.
I had a poster of it in my room, I remember.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's definitely, it's still diminishing returns, but they're back up a bit.
Yeah.
Like, all hope is not gone.
Yeah,
for this band, that's the good news.
I think it's notched. It's just gone up a notch. It's gone up. It's like gone up 1 year from Battles.
I think one and a half. A bit
more. I think no. Actually, I listened back to Battles yesterday, and it's not as bad. It's certainly. Yeah. It's actually got quite a few really good songs. Like it's just as a whole, it doesn't all fit together. It feels like In Flames, like Diet In Flames, and this is.
This feels a little bit.
Yeah,
like that as well.
Yeah, no, it does, but that's because it's essentially the same production job. It's the same producer.
Is it okay? That makes sense.
The dude, unfortunately, he's too eclectic for his own good. He's produced for Motorhead. He's produced for Less Than Jake, POD. Listen to this: Skindred, Papa Roach, Kelly Clarkson, and he even made that abomination by Simple Plan. You know, taking one for the team.
What did he do with Skindred? Do you know?
Babylon, I think. Is there a song with that title? Or is there not with that title?
Yeah, it's the first album.
I think
that was a great production, actually.
No. That's what I'm saying. He's got form, but unfortunately, the dude seems to work with... There's no quality barrier to the bands that he works with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he is the right producer to push them into... I have no interest in them going back to their sound from the 90s. I just want them to write great In Flames songs. And I think on this album, they've written like three.
Yeah, I'm almost... Even from out of fan point, I'm exactly where you are with this. Okay. So that's
okay. But you know, but that's enough for me. That is enough for me. I think Eye the Mask is the best song.
I agree.
All right.
I'd give this a 5.
Okay.
Because that's honestly what.
No, you see, that's
like If I give it a 6, then like, gotta be more than 3 songs. But no, it isn't.
No. But see, for me, I have so much, like, I can pick out stuff in almost every song that I like. It's just, it's like, there's like 3 or 4 songs for me.
Yeah, there are always bits.
I'm going to give it a 7. You got to bear in mind, like, this is the band I absolutely adore. And for them to come back and, you know, I mean that sincerely, like, this is an album I'm going to go back to, and more so than Battles, certainly more so than Siren Charms.
Yeah.
I'm very happy to say that this is like the 6th best.
It's a relief. That's like, they'll say that it's a relief.
It is a relief. Them
still sounding somewhat like what they did.
Yeah. And the other thing, there's really only one truly abominable moment in this album, which is the start of This Is Our House and that children's choir. This is the fight! That's dreadful.
The reduction, the verb in those vocals, it sounds very like you should have multi-tracked this by 15 or 4, not one. Just put
there's no amount of production that could make that song isn't even that bad, but that moment at the start where it's like a children's choir yelling in the mic,
right, it does get a little bitter,
is just woeful. But that's the only dreadful moment of this album. I think that's a triumph in itself. So 5 out of 10 from Dill, 7 out of 10 for me for Eye the Mask from In Flames. Very interested to see what they do in 2022 when they bring out their next album. And I will also go and see them on tour if I can. So that could have been tears, and it wasn't. Yes. It was slight, ever so slight reservations.
Like, we're past the ripping off the bandage portion of the podcast.
Are we? Because now
I mean your favorite bands.
Oh, yeah.
Like, literally.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's true. Neither of them let me down too badly, which is a triumph in itself. So, last new release of the week, gosh, this is turning into a long one, is Helix by Crystal Lake.
Yes.
This is a band who, again, I would say fairly comfortably slot into the metalcore genre.
Yes.
They're from Tokyo. And you're going to tell me about them, Dylan.
They're making waves. They're absolutely making waves. Like no other Japanese band I've seen in quite a while.
Since maybe Crossfade?
Yeah, Crossfade. That's a good touch point.
Okay.
Yeah. Commonalities being basically all lyrics spoken in English.
Yep.
Which is impressive by its own right. I think I heard there's one Japanese phrase, and that is mushy mushy.
Oh, there's
a phone sample, and you hear the same mushy mushy.
That's right, you do.
But aside from that, I was like, wow, they pulled this off very convincingly. To a Western audience.
We've had issues here on the show in the past with heavily accented English, yes. And that's not an issue here. The band, they sound like as accented as your typical Swedish metal band, as in not very.
Yeah. Yeah, like even some turns of phrase and some rap bits.
Are we really going to start with the bit where it loses me?
No, it doesn't lose me there. It doesn't lose me there, and it shouldn't lose you as well, because...
Shouldn't?
It's great. Well, it's pretty good.
All right.
I like how out of nowhere it was and how well he handles it out of his mother tongue.
I described it as ill-advised, but yes, that's fine. Yeah. Listen, I'm just, for me, it's like rap in metal. It has to be... just
you've loved
superb quality for it to work, and it does work sometimes, but
it's not too much.
It's
like the first bit of a song,
thankfully not very much.
First eighth of a song,
yeah
like that's like,
let's not talk about the rap, because you're right. It isn't a huge amount of
this is a goddamn hammering album production wise
yes, very much so,
in terms of the genre.
Yeah, that first, I mean, it kind of starts off with like a robotic Helix, but then once that opening track, Eon comes in, holy moly.
I've seen, just out of curiosity, I watched a lot of reaction videos on YouTube about this.
Okay.
Like, people who don't listen to the genre.
Right.
I'm pretty sure some of them have heart failure now.
It's intense, you know?
It's very intense.
I hear as much job for a cowboy as I do Devin Townsend, Fear Factory.
Pantera.
Yep.
Groove mixed with just absolute like rip your pants off triple
like
bass
suicide
pedal,
silence
triple bass pedal madness.
Yeah.
And it's very proggy at points.
Even what's his name? Gaku. Ryo, the singer. His voice even takes on a lower register in that song. Like, what I would say is that it's an interesting opener, because it actually doesn't really set the stage for the rest of the album.
No, it's rather like, this is as far as we can push it.
In
terms of heaviness, like Code Orange had that effect on people.
Yes.
Well, no,
it was the opposite, I would say, with Code Orange, because the song that everybody heard from Code Orange was...
Reminded me of this song.
Yeah, whatever it's called, the single, and then when you went to listen to the album, it was largely punishing hardcore from start to finish with just that song and one other song that kind of had like little melodic breaks in it.
Yeah.
Bleeding in the Blur.
Yes, but it's so weird with this is that you hear it a lot in the album as well.
Mm.
Like, there are some, I guess, it's more pitch melody in his heavy vocals. You hear it in Devil Cry, Apollo, especially Apollo.
Yeah.
Aeon, a lot of this stuff. It's very interesting. It's not just a backing band helping with some vocals, because it's very sparing.
No, I do like his voice, definitely. I think he's got, again, like the singer from Izami, he's got quite a versatile range. Good singer, and he's
definitely more in the metal vein. I think Izami was more punk rock. Yell
yes.
screaming.
Yes, yes, definitely.
This is definitely the death metal
section. Mixed with kind of maybe similar to what Sam from Architects does.
Yeah,
like
and what I wish David Draiman could always do, but he doesn't.
Right, yeah, no. Yeah. Well, there is, I mean, that you speak of Hail to the Fire. Yeah.
Hail to the Fire, yeah. and the middle eighth in...
Ritual, or no?
In Apollo.
Oh, yes,
where
he
literally does do...
Yeah.
But really well.
Yeah, that's that. Dumba. Yeah, that thing in it. Yeah, it's, listen, I actually really like that. You know, more so than Disturbed didn't come to mind for me. What came to mind more so was Roots era Sepultura.
Yeah, totally that.
Yeah,
totally
good. It has that kind of primal sort of, sort of blood ritual type vibe to it that I quite enjoy, actually. I like that song, Hail to Fire. I really like, if you kind of just try to ignore the lyrics, I really like that song Plus 81, which is the Japanese area code, I believe, if you're calling from abroad. It's real groovy. It's got like almost kind of a Soulwork type vibe to the guitar. Mm-hmm. And the vocals have a rap type cadence, but they're screamed and it really works.
Yeah, and thankfully, in my opinion, you can sing, lyrically, you can put whatever the fuck you want, unless it's seriously deviating to a culture or a race. Whatever you want, just sing a good melody over it. That's how fine I am.
Like, I have no issue with lyrics unless they sort of strike me as unless they kind of stick out to me as being particularly bad.
Yeah.
I think on that one, there's like, it's all this kind of from the east to the west and like bitches and sake, like we're just Tokyo bros, and I was just like, oh no.
I find like kind of fun and kooky in a way.
It's definitely kooky.
Like Man with a Mission did with Dead End Tokyo.
That worked.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
I think. I'm saying this is I like that song, and I get Plus 81 as a track. Yes. It's just there's certain lines in it where I'm like, oh,
it's not totally my favorite.
Dead End in Tokyo, I think, really worked lyrically because it was definitely twinkle in the eye.
Yeah.
But it was it had a bit more reverence. Yeah. It almost feels like they're going, we're Japanese. Yeah. Da da da. Like it's odd. It'd be like an Irish band being like Leprechaun. Yeah.
This genre does fall under the qualms of not really being able to be tongue in cheek too much.
It's tough because when it's not your native language,
can't really do it. This band can't really be tongue in cheek.
Oh, yeah, because the music is so serious.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. No, I get you. Yeah, of course.
Whereas like Man on the Mission is kind of.
Yes,
it's got a pop zane in
it's playful,
in
and I think even Devin is like, the exception of Ziltoid, his lyrics generally speaking are serious, even when his manner isn't, you know.
Yeah,
but that's a small criticism. I think, I think Sanctuary is a really nice. I mean, the ambient metalcore is probably the right way to describe a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of really cool bits.
Lots of washes of synthesizer and you know, big choruses.
Yeah.
Kind of what you expect.
Being very experimental at parts as well. Like, Devil Cry does that at the start.
Mm, yep.
I quite like how that starts with kind of just not rushing into it.
Yep.
A lot of metalcore bands just rush into a song. Don't really give space or like ambient flow to the album.
Mm.
But this album does have that, which is great.
Yeah,
I quite like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of it definitely doesn't stick to one formula, maybe to a fault, because I think the formula on tracks like Eon and even Agony, actually the third track, is strong. The only thing I don't like about Agony is just I feel like I've been told to breathe in and breathe out by so many bands at this point that I'm getting breathe in, breathe out fatigue. But the actual song itself is really strong. But then they really do experiment a lot with certain tracks on this album. Like Just Confusing is just confusing. Yeah. There's a lot of moments where the song sort of stops and then it sounds like your phone is vibrating. You know, the bits in between the phone vibrating, I think, quite good.
Yeah, it's fun. I think in the future there's a lot to pick up from this, and it's their best album yet. Like,
I haven't really
been able to grasp anything from their past too much.
Okay,
but then I think Apollo was the first song I heard from this.
Oh yeah,
which is great. Like, oh my god, it starts Apollo's with the kind of twangy, almost a Telecaster kind of guitar, with a bit of an Eastern vibe.
Yeah,
and then it just explodes into a groove.
I've heard a lot of people with this album sort of say that they really are fans of like say three or four tracks or a particular type of track, but then maybe as a whole start to finish piece of work, it doesn't quite hang together. That's probably where I'm sitting with it right now.
I don't really listen to it from start to finish because a lot of these albums are very intense, like even with Darren Gray's last album.
Yeah,
it's a lot like I'm getting old, man. I can't really
It is a lot. Yeah, even the Exami. It's like there's a lot happening at any given moment.
Exami, I think, is a bit more doable for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm a punk rock kind of guy. But Like, I like picking and choosing from this album quite a bit.
Okay.
Quite a lot, actually.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah, there's definitely tracks I would go back to. There's other tracks that, to be honest with you, it wouldn't bother me if I didn't hear them again. That's not fine. Too many, but I think, yeah, but I think in general, I the quality of it is high. Production is pristine, really, really good for the genre. Mm-hmm. I was impressed.
Yeah, and being able to like hear what low tune guitars or like 8-string guitars can play is great. Like,
yeah,
like that's always a hard thing to do without muddying it with the bass.
Yeah,
but they pull it off really well, and it's you can distinguish the riffs.
Absolutely, you can. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just interested to hear how this compares, because, like, let's be honest, it's a fairly direct comparison. These guys have a little bit more of that sort of djent periphery, like Tesseract type thing going on, but I think there is a reasonably direct comparison to be drawn between them and While She Sleeps. So I'm interested now, because While She Sleeps only came out on Friday.
And I've actually given that a few lessons already.
I saw you had, yeah. I don't like to infect my listening with other stuff when we got a show coming up, but I'm really interested to hear how that compares or whatever, because, you know, as far as this album, it does remind me quite a bit of You Are We era While She Sleeps. So, you know, at points. So, so we'll be reviewing So What, the new While She Sleeps album on the next show. You can look forward to that.
Yeah, I quite enjoy this.
Cool.
Yeah,
I quite enjoy it as well.
Yeah.
I quite enjoy it. My favorite track is... it's funny enough. I just think it starts so damn strong. I think it's Eon, the first track. Or the first kind of main track.
Yeah, Eon.
Yeah.
One of my qualms, first of all, I want to end it. I think...
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's more what I'd like to hear.
Yeah, hit me.
I'd like to hear the lead singer sing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd love to see what Azami does.
Okay.
But in this side as well, because I'm pretty sure he can sing well.
He does sing a bit on this.
He does a bit, but I want to see him, like, really reach, because I'm sure he can.
Yeah, I'm sure he can, yeah. Definitely.
If he can scream that well, then he can certainly sing. you know.
Yeah, well, he's got... I mean, he does... Like, there's melody lines on this, so I would like to hear more melody on the next... certainly on the next...
And I'm pretty sure, like, because of the genre, it's hard to keep up heavy all the time, so they might just naturally do that.
Yeah.
My favorite song is... Fuck, man. It's so hard to choose.
Mm.
I think, as of yesterday, it's Devil Cry.
Okay.
Yeah. Apollo's great as well.
Mm.
A lot of them are really, really fucking good, but Devil Cry has... enough of like the ambient synthy stuff and kind of melody and heavy. It has everything which I want from this.
Great. What's your score?
Eight, I guess. Eight. Yeah, it's eight.
Cool. I'm going to give it a 7.
Yeah.
Great.
I'm thinking in terms of You Are We, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not, I don't think I like it as much as You Are We, but it's there.
Okay.
And it's not too far away from that, which is impressive.
Yeah, definitely. I think I like this more than anything I'd previously heard by them. So, yeah. So, it's a good start for Crystal Lake. I know it's album number 5, but it's the start for me.
Yeah.
That's Helix by Crystal Lake. That is on Spotify and everywhere else that you care to look. Okay. Time to hop in our time machine and punch in 1998. I'm losing my voice here, but I definitely have enough left in the tank to talk about Mercury Rev.
That's okay, son.
Yeah. So Mercury Rev basically consists of Jonathan Donahue and Sean Grasshopper Makoviak.
Interesting. I know nothing about this artist.
I knew next to nothing about them until I did the research for this show, but turns out Mercury Rev were around for 9 years before this album was released, so got together in 1989, and they've kind of always been a reasonably kind of like an anti-band. You know the way... Ween do a similar enough thing, except Ween are obviously a little bit more of a joke. I think Ween have some amazing stuff, but you know, but they didn't, and even to a degree Weezer actually, like, in other words, they like, they don't take themselves too seriously, and they've all, like, their first album is called like Yourself, Yourself, is Steam, like, and it's, and all the lyrics are kind of really psychedelic and kind of our odd imagery, and their instrumentation is always a bit playful. It was definitely more in psychedelic rock.
Yes.
The first two albums, and then they moved in a little bit more into the orchestral realm with See You on the Other Side, the precursor to this, but only like light flourishes of it. And then that album was a total bomb and they basically kind of broke up and got really depressed and lots of life happened. And then as sort of a last ditch attempt to rekindle their friendship, Jonathan had been listening to a lot of like children's music and kind of lullabies and stuff like that. And just was like, I'm just going to, for kicks, try and write a few songs in that vein. And then got it's
very interesting.
Yeah, so this album is called Deserter Songs. And basically what it is it's Jonathan and Grasshopper's attempt to rekindle their friendship by chucking a load of orchestration and instruments, both synthetic and real, into some songs that are rock songs and the other songs that are just pure lullabies for adults with slightly disturbing imagery.
Yeah.
And it ended up being NME's album of the year in 1998 and a huge hit, and it actually turned them into pop stars.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's surreal.
For a brief time, they went back to being a cult band, but not long after, but yeah.
But to think that this did that.
Yeah.
Nuts.
Do you know what the big single was from this? Or do you want to take a guess if you don't know?
Can I take a guess?
Yeah, take a guess.
Is it like,
because there was
Delta Sun, or no. The Funny Bird?
No. Okay. No, the Funny Bird is the most 90s sounding, but no, it wasn't. It was Got Us in a Highway.
Oh yeah,
Got Us on a Highway. Yep, got that us makes in sense. A car. Yeah,
that makes sense.
So, one thing you could say with this album is it doesn't sound really 90s at all, with a couple of very minor exceptions. Right? It sounds sort of timeless.
Yeah, I mean, like, I call like bands like the Twilight Singers and Afghan Whigs 90s, but I can also call them timeless.
Yeah,
this is of that ilk.
Yeah,
and that's what first struck the mind with at least the first song. Changes up quite a bit.
Oh yeah,
it time travels very noticeably.
Yeah,
between just genres and other bands they like, it's very very interesting.
Yeah,
it's hard to have any bad things to say about this.
Right.
Because I can't write an album like this. I can't even pick fun at it, you know?
which is funny as well, because it is a light, you know, it's dealing with serious topics, but it approaches them with a sort of absurdist, what do you say, like nomenclature and stuff, like on holes. It's like, you know, talking about moles with telephones for eyes and things, you know, like it's
very Beatles and those very Beatles. Eyes.
Yes, very Beatles. Yeah. And there's moments in it where it makes you laugh, I think.
Yes, actually.
Like musically, like this musical jokes that they play on you as the album goes on.
Yeah, as I noticed with like the songs I talked about, Funny Bird and all that.
Yeah, and the happy end is just like, the happy end and the sort of secret track at the end are both like, like they're just fucking with you, basically.
They are. They are.
But it's sandwiched between such absolute genius, like as far as songwriting and iconic vocal lines and things goes. It's like it totally justifies it.
Yeah.
I think this album rests on your like how on board you are with the really heavily sort of sugary nature of some of the arrangements.
I'm not too on board with it.
Oh, okay.
As I've gone on record to say, I am not a Beatles fan 100%.
I don't think this. Yeah, that's fine.
It's not a lot of that. It borrows from a lot of things I really like.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Neil Young.
Yep, Neil Young for sure.
Between Neil Young and Greg Dulli-esque vocal lines.
Yep.
A lot of like very interesting vocals where he floats around the note he's trying to get.
Yeah.
And he kind of can float above it at points. And sometimes vocalists use that to kind of hide the fact that they can't sing. He's doing it intentionally.
Yes.
And I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
And it's just,
I think there's
a lot more vocal
routes
you can go with that.
Yes.
You know.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and like again, influence wise, it's album, stuff that you wouldn't expect to hear. Like on Hudson Lion, I hear, you know, there's a little bit of Clarence Clemens in that sax line.
Oh yeah, the sax line is awesome.
A little bit of Jimi Hendrix in the guitar solo, and actually, you know, this album does explode into reasonably like sort of heavy.
It does.
Almost sort of garbage esque moments, like on the Funny Bird.
And like weird psychedelic rock
at points. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Stone Roses would probably be a contempt.
Totally.
on that song, and Oasis and stuff like that. But that's, you know. But then on Tonight It Shows, I think it could almost be the opening credits for a 1970s like BBC detective or something, or like maybe like a period drama, you know, like Pride and Prejudice or something. That you know, it's,
yeah, it's very TV showish.
It's very TV showish. Yeah,
I like that. Yeah, I like that quite a bit.
Do you know what this reminds me of, just in terms of like utilizing various sort of detritus from pop culture and different genres of music, is Junk by M83. Do you remember that album?
Yes, I love that album.
It's great. And I think, you know, it does a similar thing. It, like, this album takes like things like children's music and TV show intros and, like, you know, even like at one point Christmas carols. Like, there's a reference to Silent Night, I think, in Endlessly. Did you get that?
Yeah, I got it. I definitely got it.
Da, 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 da. But yeah, it, you know, it takes those things, but then it adds a lot of depth.
Yeah, it's very DIY in a weird way.
Yeah.
Like, it's just unique. It's just totally unique, you know, which is the stuff they put into it.
Yeah.
Like, it's like they intentionally took like a notepad and just wrote down everything that they haven't heard.
Mm.
Put into a song, it all like little bits.
Yeah,
this album has, as you said, tons of little bits and Easter eggs and stuff. Like,
yeah,
all that is totally, I haven't heard stuff like that before.
Yeah,
which is great.
Final Fantasy is probably the only other person I can think of that does a similar type approach.
Yeah,
and but of obviously course, came much later.
Twilight Singers, Greg Dooley's side project.
Twilight Singers is excellent, but Twilight Singers is kind of a more, straight ahead. From an instrumental perspective, no?
Yeah, it's a bit more straight ahead. A bit more bandy, of course.
Yeah, a bit more bandy.
There's moments where, like, a whole song is, like, kind of a phone call.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, it reminded me a lot of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, in a good, very good way.
Yeah, absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. And then it does have an iconic sort of center point in Goddess on a Highway.
Yeah.
Which actually was a song that Jonathan had written back in the before the band, or in the very, very, very earliest days of the band back in the late 80s,
yeah.
And didn't bring in, and he was actually really self-conscious about it, but it's worth it, maybe my favorite song on the album. I think that chorus is so yearning and kind of, it feels like it's really emotionally charged, that, you know, yeah. I know it ain't gonna last. The way he sings it, and that line as well, when it's like, when your eyes arrive, they explode like two bugs on glass. I mean, it's such a bizarre image. Yeah. But it really works. I think
the lyrics definitely struck out for me in a good way.
Yeah. And that bass at the start as well, is like that bloom, 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 bloom. Yeah. It's gorgeous. It's just gorgeous. Everything about this album is just lush. It sounds wonderful. Credit to David Friedman, I think, who produced and also played a lot of the bass on the album. Just like, especially for an album from the late 90s,
yeah.
You know, it sounds absolutely, it couldn't have been produced better today, I don't think.
No, it literally could have, but not in the same way.
No, but I don't think it could have been done with a higher fidelity or with different techniques, but I think as far as what they were trying to achieve on Deserter Songs, I couldn't imagine it being better. I think it's stunning.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not this music is not totally for me.
Yeah, okay.
Like, it's not.
It's not always for me.
I mean,
you have to be in the mood for it.
That's true, yeah, and I rarely am. Okay. Even when it's relaxing music, I rarely am.
Okay.
I just don't pick from that side, like the side the Beatles spawned for hundreds of musicians. I don't pick from that side.
Yeah. The only Beatles album this reminds me of is probably Magical Mystery Tour,
yes.
Which is where they got really,
yeah.
You know, orchestral and wacky at the same time.
Yeah.
But this to me is more,
I can pick and
filled
choose,
in, know? I think.
Yeah, it's, it is. Yeah. It is. And I can pick and choose and be fine with that and
yeah.
legitimately love a lot of these songs. Yeah. But like, it's definitely not my music.
Oh, I got that. Yeah, yeah. That's totally fine. Yeah, it's weird. It took me a while to persevere with it. I think I got into this initially because they were playing headline. Yeah. They were headlining a festival I went to for free. I won tickets. And actually, I don't even think I went to see them, which is such a stupid, but I had never heard of them. And then I came back and I was like, who was that band? I didn't even think I saw it, but I just looked them up and I was like, oh man, I was really kicking myself then that I hadn't even bothered to go and see their set because I really loved this.
Yeah, like, I love the challenge of me sitting down and listening to something I would never listen to.
Had you listened to this ever before?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, just all totally right. A new random thing for me. All
right, okay. And I'm guessing that it was the latter half, the slightly more like breakbeat 90s type stuff that
there, you know, there's appealed. Some, yeah, like The Funny Bird, Delta Sun.
Bottleneck Stomp.
Yeah, Bottleneck Stomp.
Well, that one, I love that one because it really sounds like the closing credits to sort of a teen film or something.
That's what I got.
It's really just joyous and...
Yeah, like, they'll get on a playlist. They are
already... goodbye, I'm not saying hello. Like, it's such a great way to end a record, I think.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed those bits. I enjoyed it all. It just won't sit down and listen to it, you know?
I get that. I totally get that. Yeah. All right, cool. So that wraps up our analysis of Deserted Songs by Mercury Rev.
And I want more bands to do something like this.
Me too.
I want to see more new bands do something like
this. I definitely hear the influence of Mercury Rev on people like Sufjan Stevens.
Yes.
And
that makes sense.
And there's other, you know, somebody that you brought, even like Amanda Palmer and stuff like that. It's like, it is just that kind of willingness to bring in odd instrumentation, odd song structures, and not kind of worry about something sounding twee or anything. You know, it's just I really like that approach.
I get that. I do get that.
Yeah. It kind of came in. It comes in. I do hear it from time to time, but it's not typically the genre that this influenced. Isn't a genre that I typically listen to.
So, I mean, I'll go back to it and listen to it once and see what I can get from it. You know.
But all right.
I appreciate your input.
I appreciate your input. Okay. This has been an extra long episode of Kill Shuffle. Thank you so much for joining us on this snowy Sunday night. We will catch you in 2 weeks when we will be looking at some very exciting new albums.
And spoilers, I listened to the Weezer album we'll cover, and I've already listened to the other album. Like, I've already given them actually a few shakes.
We will have to make a decision as well to cover that Weezer album. But
That's
just a conversation hopping off, Mike.
That would be an ecumenical matter.
That would be an ecumenical matter. In the meantime, take care of yourselves and each other.
Okay, see you guys.
And I'll see you in a few weeks.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.